October 24th, 2012, Vrindavan, India, Nectar Devotion, Chapter 11, Part 2. Okay, so we went over servitorship. Then the next, hey, ladies, hello, hello, ladies. Thank you. You're welcome to do that out there if you want, okay? You can go out there and do that if you want. The next item is devotional service in friendship, which we're going to cover rather briefly.
Can I ask just from the machine that you sent around?
Yes. 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 Try to make them hard.
What about the chapter?
Try to make it.
We're on chapter 11.
Try to make them hard.
Yes, write difficult questions. So devotional service and friendship, which is considered a difficult process, is considered a process that neophytes find somewhat difficult to do. And there's two main categories and two subcategories under the first main category. Yes? My own opinion is that everything material is a whole lot harder than anything spiritual. That's my own opinion. That whatever trouble it takes to do the spiritual, it's a lot more trouble to do the material. That's my opinion. Obviously, there's a lot of people in the material world who don't agree with me. So the first category of friendship is when you think of the Lord as your friend, especially as your superior friend, as your benefactor. This is something like your parents are your friend. So the example given is Draupadi, who was convinced that Krishna would always take care of her. Right? That you're my friend, you're looking out for me. So I'm sure sometimes we've had a friend who's in a highly placed position and can take care of us. So then another, a little bit more intimate, is seeing that the Lord is like an equal who's a well-wisher. Now, what's interesting here is that the way Srila Prabhupada describes this is not that Krishna is my friend, but that I'm Krishna's friend. And what is the example that Prabhupada gives here of acting as Krishna's friend? No? How can any of us act as Krishna's friend? What's the example? That's another category. Yes. And what does Krishna want? What's the thing that Krishna wants the most? Love. And he wants love from especially the jivas who aren't loving him. So how can we be Krishna's well-wisher? What particularly? What specific service? Yes.
Distributing his love,
yes. Yes. So Srila Prabhupada puts preaching in this category of friendship. So if I really want to be, you know, it's easy to say, I'm really sorry I didn't bring my other glasses because I hate having glasses on my nose. I know I am an old school teacher, but still. I always want to just take them off so I can just look at you without these funny things on my nose. But then I can't see the book. So generally we think of Krishna as our friend, as what is he going to do for me? But it's reciprocal friendship. It's also, what am I going to do for Krishna as a friend? What kind of friendly service am I going to do? So this is the most friendly service, is to be a preacher. Krishna appreciates that much more than just, you know, rasgullas and mangoes, and cleaning the temple and dressing him And so Prabhupada was always pushing for preaching and doing book distribution. So although this friendship is an advanced platform, that to be a friend of Krishna like that is available to anybody. Then Prabhupada also talks about friendship particularly in Sakya Ras. So there's a general friendship that anybody can do. Anybody can feel, I'm Krishna's friend, even if you're in Dasya Ras. You can feel, I'm Krishna's friend because I'm preaching and I'm helping to bring people to him. I'm doing something that's friendly to Krishna. But then there's another kind of friendship which is specifically for those in Sakya Ras. And the example Prabhupada gives here, which I've always thought was an interesting example, is what? Yes?
Oh, no, I have another question.
Well, what example did Prabhupada give? It's actually Rupa Goswami's example, of course. Lying down in the temple.
Oh, that's right.
Just which I've never quite got that. How is that? I mean, I know it's a sign of intimacy that if you think that someone's a king, you don't go and lie down in their room. But if you visit a friend, you know, if you visit the house of a friend, you might just lie down in their room if they're a very close friend. Hmm? You feel very comfortable. I mean, if someone's really a close friend, you go to their house and you can just open up their refrigerator and take out some juice and pour yourself a drink. You've got to be a really close friend to do that, right?
Yeah.
Especially in India. A little bit easier in America to do that. That's different. That's quite different. When you're offering dandavats, that's in the mood of submission. Yeah. No, we're talking about like, exactly, you go to a friend's house and you just lie down on their couch and you talk to them while you're lying down, etc. You know, I went to visit one friend here in Vrindavan the other day. And she'd had a long day and she was really tired. And she said, I've been meeting with people all day. Omri, is it okay if I lie down and talk to you? I said, yeah, sure, whatever.
Actually, I asked her to be in the temple and sleep in the temple room floor, so actually that's...
But that's a little different. That usually devotees are sleeping in the temple room either because there's no other place to sleep, or sometimes devotees are sleeping there to guard the deities. So it's usually a little different. Then Prabhupada's talking about intimate sakirasta.
So what is the... how is it applicable sleeping in the temple room? Or lying down in the temple room?
I get that. Is that just a mood? You know, that somebody in a mood of intimate friendship just says, oh, hiya, Krishna.
You say that you're more than just, if Krishna's allowing you to sleep there as a servant, it's pretty special.
That's true, but it may not be in this mood of intimate friendship. This mood of intimate friendship is more like, oh, hi, Krishna. How you doing today?
Cowboys.
Yeah, like the cowboys. That's their mood. And they're, you know, Krishna, you didn't hold up Govardhan Hill. We were all helping you hold it up, you know. We're stronger than you. And how you doing today, Krishna? Hey, Krishna, you know, you want a sweet bowl? Okay, close your eyes. And they stick a flower in his mouth. So we don't do that as part of our deity worship. Could you imagine, you know, go to cook an offering and just put a bunch of flowers? Or sometimes they take the insides out of the samosas and fill it up with flowers as a joke. So this lying down in the temple room by Krishna's intimate friends is really a symptom of how we behave with our intimate friends. Like I was saying, I was visiting one of my very close friends the other day and she was lying down while she was talking to me. So you only do that with a very close friend, right?
Yeah.
Correct? You don't just, you don't do that even with your ordinary friends. You're more formal. Okay, so I don't want to spend that much time on that, although we could. I actually have a whole seminar on that, and being Krishna's friend. So surrendering everything to the Lord, we're going to look at this and being a surrendered soul together, although they're two separate items. One of them is a little different than the other. The first is Atmanivedanam, which Atma can be described as the soul, the body, or the mind. So I'm giving you the activities of my body. I'm doing the activities of my body for you. I'm working for you with my body. A surrendering of the mind is I'm thinking of you, my thinking, feeling, willing, and of the soul, especially my willing, my inner free will, my innermost desire is given to you. And the example is given to Bali Marsh. Everything I have belongs to you. And Sharanagati, which is being a surrendered soul, is really not just that I'm giving everything to Krishna, but I'm really Krishna's property. I was just listening to a class this morning, Prabhupada talking on nectar devotion a little earlier in the book, and Prabhupada said something really wonderful. He said that being renounced, you can't say you own nothing. He said, it's not possible to say you own nothing. You have to own something. So what you should own is Krishna. He said, you should think of Krishna as your property. So this is the, you know, aham mameti. I and mine. So usually that's in terms of the upadis. I am Urmila. I own this watch. No, I am an American woman, and I am a teacher, and I am a speaker, and I am a member of ISKCON, and I am a grandmother. That's all I. It's all the false I. And then an I, this is mine. This is my watch and my really cool folding glasses. See how cool it is? It's mine. See? Mine. And this is my recorder. And this is my bag. So that's the aham mameti, you know? This is who I am, and these are mine. And it even extends to other people, right? This is my husband, and my wife, and my mother, and my children, whatever. So instead, we don't try to erase I and mine. So we make it, I am Krishna's, and Krishna is mine. So you can say this is the essence of both kinds of surrender. I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. And the surrender, body, mind, and self, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me. Whatever you want to do with me, that's okay. And Prabhupada says this is advanced. This cannot be imitated. To really do this on a deep level is advanced. This is not something, this item of devotional service is very difficult for the neophytes. Now the neophytes can imitate it. You know, you can go live in an ashram and spend all day washing the pots and cleaning the floor, but to really have this mentality that I belong to Krishna and Krishna belongs to me and I'm sold out. Prabhupada was saying in this lecture this morning, I'm Krishna's slave. You know, we hear words like that and we cringe. At least I do, coming from a democratic country. You know, we're all from democratic countries here. Anybody here from a dictatorship? Any Cubans or Vietnamese people here? So we come from a democratic country, we come from a free society, right, and this whole concept that I could be a slave, that I would just give myself to someone and they could do whatever they wanted with me is really an anathema. Because if you give yourself to another jiva and they could do whatever they want with you, they probably won't do something very nice with you, is the reality. I'm sorry to say. I would humbly suggest that you never give body, mind, words, and self to a conditioned jiva. That's my humble request. If you do, you will be very sorry. Because another conditioned jiva will not properly reciprocate with you and fulfill all your desires, and you'll be very frustrated and unhappy. But you can give everything to Krishna. Because Krishna, it's something like, why is the love of the mother for the child so elevated? Because a mother thinks the child is part of her. On one level, that's true. You know, the child's body develops in the mother's womb. I mean, that's their whole excuse for abortion. They say the woman can do what she likes with her body. And I keep thinking, but it's not her body. It's somebody else's body that happens to be inside of her body. It's like you can do what you want with your house, but can you do what you want with a guest in your house? Just because I happen to be in your house. Anyway, that's the woman feels like that. She feels like the baby is part of her. And then she feeds the baby from her own body. So she feels like the child is an extension of her own body. So why does the mother have this? You see this among the animals too, right? Like Prasanta told me, don't ever hurt the baby monkeys. The whole tribe will come and attack you. So we're part of Krishna. We're actually part of Krishna. Krishna is the super self. This is explained nicely in the Bhagavatam with the story of Krishna becoming the calves and the cowherd boys. And Maharaj Pariksit said, why did the parents love their children more when they were Krishna? And Sukadeva Goswami says, ultimately we all love ourself. The highest person we love is the self. And Krishna is the self of the self. So when you surrender everything to Krishna, you're surrendering to your super self. You're not surrendering to an other. It's not an other. Yeah, let me just finish and then we'll have questions. I'm almost finished. Offering a favorite article. This very much relates indirectly, but it very much relates indirectly to the idea that real surrender to Krishna means doing things you like for Krishna, not doing things you don't like for Krishna. That surrender is not measured by how much you hate what you're doing. You know, sometimes we have people offer a temple an old, beat-up, used car that fails after the devotees drive it for 1 mile. Or someone gives you a present and you don't want it, and so you just give it to somebody else because I didn't want it anyway.
Re-gifting.
Yeah, re-gifting something you didn't want. But offering somebody something that you really like, now that's special. So offering to Krishna what we really like, doing things for Krishna that we really enjoy, but doing them for Krishna's pleasure instead of my pleasure. I really like to do this, I'm really good at this, but I'm going to start doing it for Krishna's pleasure instead of my pleasure. That's really valuable. So offering Krishna something you really like, offer Krishna the food you really like, offer Krishna the activities you really like, offer Krishna things you really like. This can also mean offering to Krishna things that Krishna really likes. So it can also mean that. But generally it means offering to Krishna something I really like. Then serving the Tulsi tree. So previously, Rupa Goswami had talked in a general way about serving Tulsi trees and banyan trees. But now he's giving specific. So, you know, offer the Tulsi leaves in devotion, pray to Tulsi, bowing down, hearing about, watering the tree, sowing the tree, etc. So now he's giving more specifics. All right. We are almost done with our Angas of Bhakti. Next chapter, tomorrow, we'll be finishing the last of the 64 items. So, you took my question paper. Did you give it back?
No.
Or did you abscond with it? Okay. We had some really good questions here. We always do, but really good questions here. Okay, how the articles of this world being highly contaminated in so many ways can be put into the service of Krishna? Or how to erase, how to do something, the purities of the article, how to create something being put to the service? Well, this is our Achincha Beta Beta philosophy. So there's two extreme philosophies. One is that God is only out there. There's God, and there's the world. And the world is evil and material, and God is spiritual. And then, no, you can't offer anything to God because everything's impure. And then the only kind of life you can live is you go in the mountains away from other people, and you try to stop everything. You try to stop eating, you try to stop speaking, you try to stop breathing even, because everything is impure. So this is, of course, the way of the impersonalists. This is the way of the Buddhists, of the Jains, and so forth. Let me try to stop everything because everything's impure. And let me just become one with the transcendence. And then the other view is that God is everything, but then I can't offer anything to God because there's no separation between the things and God. If this is God, I can't offer this to God. So if God is all the way over there and this is impure, I can't offer it to God because it's impure. And if this is God, I can't offer it to God because it is God. So we see both is true. We see that Krishna is over there and the piece of paper is over here. So I can offer it to Krishna. But Krishna is everything. The piece of paper is also Krishna. Therefore, I can offer it to him because it's also pure. It's also his energy. There really is nothing impure. Impurity is my mentality of wanting to lord it over. Things themselves are not impure. Of course, there are some forms of things which we do not offer. Just like we do not offer fermented grapes and potatoes and barley. No, we offer grapes and potatoes and barley. We just don't offer them when they're fermented. Do you understand? So this is the form of something that we're not offering. One can even offer killing to Krishna. That's what Arjuna did. So Arjuna offered killing of people on the battlefield in war to Krishna. Now you can't offer murder to Krishna. You can't offer, you know, animal slaughter to Krishna. But there is a kind of killing that can be offered to Krishna if you're a soldier. So everything can be offered to Krishna. There's nothing that can't be offered to Krishna in some way. You know, you can't offer to Krishna in any way. I can offer you this piece of paper, but not by throwing it at your head. you know, and not by crumbling it up and stuffing it down your throat. So, you know, there's a way of offering it. So everything's pure, everything's Krishna, but it's how do you offer it? You can offer stool to Krishna by using it as fertilizer in the soil. There's just nothing that can't be offered to Krishna. But how are you going to offer it? In what form are you going to offer it? In what consciousness are you going to offer it? But with our Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy, everything is ultimately Krishna's energy. And there's a nice purport where Prabhupada says, I can't remember if it's in 7 or 9, where Prabhupada's talking about how everything is Krishna. So we do believe that everything is Krishna. At the same time, everything is not Krishna. So therefore, I can offer to Krishna. But you know how to offer, in what consciousness to offer, in what form to offer, that may change. In regard, oh, I love this next question. In regard to Vaishnava opera, by the way, that was a great question. That question about how can we offer things of this world is at the root of some of the deepest philosophical arguments that have engaged philosophers and religionists and spiritualized people since the beginning of time. Should I say this or not? I usually take risks. You've all seen I take lots of risks. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. So one of my god brothers recently sent me a something from a leader in some other Gaudiya group saying that basically women couldn't be devotees because their body is contaminated. I'm thinking, who does it? Anybody doesn't have a contaminated body? You want to like stand up and raise your hand? You know, it's just, huh? So that was rather funny. Actually, first I was kind of angry, but I thought it was rather funny. If somebody thinks they have a pure body. So it's in one sense everything is impure, but in another sense it's sarva kalam idam brahman. Everything is brahman. So to think this is pure, this is impure, this is auspicious, this is inauspicious. That's okay if you're functioning on the level of karma kanda, but that's not in bhakti. That's not what we want to be. That's not how we're seeing things. It's rather everything's related with Krishna. How can I relate this with Krishna? What's the process for relating it to Krishna? Like in 424, you know, the person offering, what's offered, the consummation, so everything becomes Brahman. So and Prabhupada says in that purport, this is the science for how to turn the material back into the spiritual. How do you do it? That everything is spiritual. But you have to know how to do it. There's a science. How to have everything regain its spiritual nature. In regards to Vaishnava Aparad, should we even mention about previous uninspiring or sinful life of great personalities? For example, the failure of Vishwamitra as a yogi, but actually he's great. Actually, Vishwamitra is great. Do you know who Vishwamitra is? Right? In Ram Lila, who is he? What does Vishwamitra do? Today's Ram Vijay. So.
He's a spiritual master.
He's a spiritual master, and also, what did he do for Ramchandra?
He said...
Yes, he was a matchmaker. Vishwamitra was a matchmaker for Ram and Sita. And guess who the Brahmin is who brings Rukmini's message to Krishna? Guess who that is? Our good old friend Vishwamitra. As a matchmaker, and guess who arranged the marriage of Lakshmi and Mahaprabhu? Our Vishwamitra Muni, again, in another life. So that's his rasa. He's in a parental ras as Krishna's matchmaker. So that's what he, as a sadhana siddhi, that's what he eventually attained. So yes, he actually is great. And we may thus make a Vaishnava aparad. Similarly, we example of Bharat and Lord Brahma in derogatory sense. Isn't aparad and not the correct way? Well, interesting about Lord Brahma, because when the... The sons of Marichi, but who were they? I can't remember their names. So the sons of Marichi, when they saw Lord Brahma lusting after his daughter, they had contempt. Yeah, there were Sunda Maharishi. What are they called? They're the name for them. Anyway, they had contempt. Remember we were talking about, she's not here, but the when she was reading about the definition of blasphemy, everybody was here?
Yeah.
And she was reading the dictionary definition of blasphemy is when you have contempt. You know what contempt, you remember what contempt is? You know, I am great and you are small, I am better than you. So this contempt. And because they had contempt, they had to take birth as demons. And then the next life, they had to be killed by their father or grandfather from their previous life, now in the form of Kamsa. So one should not have contempt. One should not have contempt. So why do we read about these fall downs of great personalities? Why?
We should not, about the great personalities, like, we should not think that if anything bad happens, we should not think that.
But why do we read about them? Okay, so we know, don't read with contempt. Why are they there at all?
So we know what not to do.
We know what not to do, yeah.
We can relate.
We can relate, yes. Any other reasons?
Respect being there for them.
We can think like that. It's Leela, yes. Just like Prabhupada and talking about Maharaj Purikhit, like every purport practically in that chapter, he says, this was Krishna's will, it 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 was Krishna's will. But why is it there? Why is it there in the Shastra?
To warn us.
That we if we're going to say, well, I can gamble, I'm a great devotee, I can gamble, I won't fall down. And somebody can say, are you better than Yudhisthira? You know, if you say, well, I'm very advanced. I'm a very advanced devotee. I can, you know, I can do... We'll say, what about Bharat? He was an advanced devotee. He was really an advanced devotee. And he had to, you know, take another birth. Because he wasn't careful. So that way we don't have any excuses. But if we have contempt, then that is upward. So if we just say, oh, that bird, that Vishramita, look at him. Now, that's very dangerous. We shouldn't have contempt for anybody. Contempt is a really bad idea. Okay, this one's a little complicated. I'm going to leave it till last. Varnashram has nothing to do with pure bhakti. Why Srila Prabhupada desired it would be nice if Krishna consciousness movement accommodate Varnashram system. Well, I see, we've got to work in the world. You know... There's a natural progression in life. So even though people don't know anything about Varnashram, most people in the world, when they're young, they're students. When they're in the middle, when they're in their youthhood, they're married. When they're older, they're retired. Most people do that. So why not introduce a system where you can do it in such a way that will help you in your Krishna consciousness? Why not? You're doing it anyway. And most people between the ages of 20 and 50 or 20 and 60 are earning a livelihood, right? Most people in the world. Why not do it in a way? Why not learn how you could do it in a way that helps you in your Krishna consciousness? Why not? You know, especially this idea of dividing occupations into four categories. Well, then you open the windows. Otherwise it gets really stuck. Oh, I'm sorry. There, you can open the windows. But we just need some oxygen. So just somewhere we're getting. I don't care how we get oxygen. Just we need to get out. No, don't open that door. No, no, no. We'll get some very interesting students.
Yes,
one of those. We'll get one of two kinds of students, neither of which we want in the classroom. I mean, we like the cows, but not in the classroom. And we don't want the monkeys in the classroom. Definitely not. No. I already have my mind, I don't need the monkeys also. So, you know, why take the different occupations and divide them into four? What's the purpose? Because out in the world there's, you know, thousands of occupations. Why categorize them into four categories? Because in these categories they have different kinds of sacrifices. You know, the question comes all the time. In fact, it's here. How do I know that what I'm doing is for Krishna's pleasure? You know, it's all the time. People ask, what does Krishna want me to do? You get this question all the time, wherever I go. How do I know what Krishna wants me to do? First of all, it's not generally that Krishna wants you to do only one thing. Generally, there's a choice of what Krishna wants you to do. Generally. I mean, sometimes there may be just, you know, go fight the battle. But usually there's some options. But how do you know what Krishna wants you to do? Okay. Well, you've got Prabhupada selling us 16 mounds, four regulative principles, Mangalarti, Bhagavatam, etc. We have our basic sadhana. That takes up a few hours every day. Then we have the other angas of bhakti, which Prabhupada says you can perform according to your taste. So you can go through the angas of bhakti, perform according to your taste, and you decide, you know, okay, do I want to do the becoming a servant? Do I want to do the becoming a friend? Do I want to do the taking care of Tulsi? Do I want to do the visiting holy places? Do I want to do the archana? What do I want to do? And then, there's how you have to maintain yourself. Krishna says everyone has to work to maintain themselves. You have to do something to maintain yourself. So what are you going to do? How are you going to maintain yourself in a way that's pleasing to Krishna? So you can look at your psychology, and it's very nicely divided into four. Of course, sometimes we may not fit neatly into one of those four. And you think, what do I like to do? Do I like to protect knowledge? Do I like to protect people? Do I like to protect animals and natural resources? Do I like to protect the arts and the skills and the crafts? Which do I want to protect for Krishna? And then you see what's your sacrifice that you do. What goes along with that? You know, so each varna has its way of sacrificing and its particular kind of prasadam that you get from the sacrifice. So you can start by asking, what kind of prasadam do I like? And then there's a way to cook it. So it's something like that. So this is true in terms of both the varnas and the ashramas. If you want to look at the ashramas in terms of just married or renounced, although there's quite some difference between brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas. What kind of prasadam do I want? Do I want the prasadam of freedom? Well, then I have to go for the vanaprastha or the sannyas ashram. Do I want the prasadam that someone else just takes care of me and I just do what I'm told and I just follow orders and I take that's the brahmachari ashram. If I want the prasadam of I have my own place and my own money and I can engage in a wide variety of ways to maintain myself and I have the happiness of the opposite sex and I have the happiness of children, and then you take the sacrifice of the grahastha ashram. If you say, you know, I like working with ideas and thoughts, or do I like working with people? Or do I like working with animals and natural resources? Or do I like working with skills and crafts? And then each of them has their particular kind of sacrifice. You know, the sacrifice of a person who wants to protect people, they're collecting and redistributing wealth. They have to have very high ethics and morals. They have to be willing to put themselves on the line to protect others. The responsibility of those who want to take care of natural resources and animals is they have to be responsible stewards of the land. They have to maintain the purity of the land and the water and the air and the animals, and they can't be greedy, and they have to distribute a lot in charity and maintain the whole society. And the austerity of those who are maintaining the arts and the skills and the crafts is they have to make sure that those are used in a way that honors the skill of individuals, not like the factories, where the ancient skills and arts are preserved, where people keep their pride of craftsmanship, and where everything is glorifying Krishna, where things aren't dragging people into sense gratification. If you want to work with ideas and philosophy, then you have to make sure that you don't compromise the truth, even if the truth makes you look bad. You agree to look bad and let the truth conquer. You don't twist the truth just to get money or just to get some kind of prestige or just to make yourself look good. So these are various kinds of sacrifices. I mean, you could go into much more detail, but it gives you a kind of blueprint. What does Krishna want? You know, I look at my nature. I have one nature that's throughout this life, and then I have a nature that's changing over my life. My varna is usually for my whole life. My ashram generally changes over the course of my life. And I say, okay, what kind of prasadam do I want to eat? What do I want to enjoy in this world? How do I like to enjoy? How do I fit? Or if you're more advanced than that, you can say, you know, what kind of body and mind do I have? It's like you're looking at a puzzle and you say, you know, okay, where does my piece fit in the puzzle? And it gives you a blueprint for that. Whereas if you just use modern society's demarcations, it doesn't really give you that information. You can't really figure out how to do it. It's not so useful. But to be attached to Varnashram for itself, it's just material. You know, as a tool in Krishna's service. It's just like if you're attached to the external material manifestation of Vrindavan, that's just going to get you another birth in India. It's not going to take you back to Godhead. You know, you've got to be attached to the actual spiritual Vrindavan. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Don't be attached to external things. But we use external things. It's like saying, why do we have tables when they're, you know, external? They're useful. How do you know whether you're really surrendering to Krishna? How do you know whether you've eaten? You feel satisfied. How do you know if surrendering to Krishna? You will feel joyful. Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir hoksajay hoitukiya pratyata yad yatma supersedati. You'll feel satisfied. You'll feel joyful. And it will be a different joyful than material joy. So material joy in the mode of ignorance is I'm happy because I'm better than you. I'm happy because I'm insulting you. I'm happy because I'm stealing from you. I'm happy because I'm doing something evil. It's not a joy at all. It's a funny kind of mode of ignorance. Happiness is a very peculiar kind of happiness. It's a I don't know. It's kind of the happiness you get from drinking soda. You know, like soda. It's not food. You understand? Artificially, chemically sweetened soda. It doesn't even have real sugar in it. You ever drunk that stuff? So what kind of happiness do you get from it? I don't know, it's a funny happiness. It doesn't nourish your body. It doesn't even taste very good. It has like this chemical, right? You know it's unhealthy for you. And there's some kind of happiness there, but I don't know. It's a little weird. It's a weird kind of happiness, yeah. Or the kind of happiness you get from doing something wrong and not getting caught. You know, wow, I did something wrong and nobody caught me. It's kind of strange happiness. Happiness in the mode of passion is happiness from being a good person, from being a righteous person, and having items for your sense gratification. So items for sense gratification is very superficial, just has to do with the body, and being a good person is just, it's a kind of, I am a good person. It's, as Krishna says, mental concoction. You're not really feeling happiness either. The only time you actually feel any kind of joy is in the mode of goodness, where you're working for purification and for salvation. And sometimes spiritual happiness can be confused with the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is illuminating. But a difference is that the mode of goodness comes and goes. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. So one may think that the illumination of the mode of goodness, which comes and goes.
What do you mean by illumination? What is
a feeling of self-satisfaction, peace, vision, knowledge, freedom. So one who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. But spiritual happiness is more than just illumination. It's much deeper. And spiritual happiness can be experienced even when the body and the mind are in attachment and delusion. Bhagavad Gita 14:22-25. The body and the mind are going to be affected by illumination, attachment, and delusion, guaranteed, as long as you have a material body. It is going to be, as Prabhupada says, read purport 14:22-25 Bhagavad Gita. As long as you have a material body, the material body will be affected by illumination, attachment, and delusion. Definitely. Sometimes your mind will feel light and happy and free. Sometimes your mind will feel sad and depressed. Sometimes your body will be energized. Sometimes your body will be exhausted. Right? Sometimes we're so tired we can't do anything. It happened to me last night. I was so tired. I couldn't even think. I couldn't function. And other times, you know, I'm brimming with ideas and thoughts. And so that's not going to go away as long as one has a material body. But the happiness of surrendering to Krishna is independent of those things. You can feel happy by surrendering to Krishna even when your body and mind are exhausted, even when your body and mind is sick, even when someone has insulted you, even when the place you thought you could stay actually isn't available or is covered with dirt and there's not really any place to stay, and the prasadam you thought you'd get somebody else took and now there's nothing for you to eat, and you know, all these things that happen. The plate that I had saved in the refrigerator that said, hands off only for Urmila, that I had planned to break my nirjala fast with, and I opened the refrigerator and it was gone. And finally one devotee confessed and says, well, we came back from preaching at midnight and when it was still there, I figured you didn't want it. So, you know, whether somebody gives you a nice plate of prasadam or whether you don't have anything, that story Radhanaswami tells, any of you read his book? How he was fasting for a month, eating only a carrot every day, and after that month fast, he had 1 rupee and bought a bag of peanuts.
The monkey stole it.
And then there were some peanuts on the ground, you know, the monkey stole that too. But how do you know you're surrendering to Krishna? You have a happiness that's not dependent on this up and down of the modes of nature. You will feel joyful. You shouldn't have to ask somebody, am I experiencing Krishna consciousness? It's something like, I don't have to ask, did I eat enough? I know. If you're doing Krishna consciousness and you're not satisfied, then either you're not doing Krishna consciousness, you're doing something else. You're doing a weed that looks like bhakti. And it's packed up tightly with the bhakti creeper, but it's not bhakti. Or you are doing bhakti and you're offending probably devotees. Yeah. That's how you know. And also we can say, not unimportant, you're doing something according to sadhu, shastra, and guru. You're not just making up something. You're not just making it up. So it should be. You should be able to point to, here's where Prabhupada says I should be doing this, here's where Shastra says, here's where the Acharyas say I should be doing it. It's right here. Here it is in the book. Here's the line. And you should be feeling satisfaction. If you're not feeling satisfaction, then either you're misinterpreting what's there, you're doing something else, or you're committing some offense. So both need to be there. How do I know the things I'm doing are actually for Krishna's pleasure, or is there still a little hidden motive behind it? I am sure, unless you're experiencing total ecstasy 24 hours a day, you've got some other motives. Have to. It's like saying, how can I be pure before I'm pure? You can't be. You can't be. I also get this question all the time, everywhere I go. How can I be pure when I'm not pure? You can't. But you can be aspiring to be pure when you're not pure. And if you're aspiring to be pure, that's uttama bhakti. Right? Didn't we read that just in this? Wasn't it right here? It was in this section. I know it was. That even someone who just wants to... They're in uttama bhakti. It was in today's chapter. I know it was. That even if someone's not, but they're just desiring to do so. Where was it? Oh, I know it's here. I made a note of it even. Which reminds us of Bhagavad Gita 3:31. And where is it? And of course, now that I want to find it, I can't find it. Does anybody know where it is?
Is it in chapter 11?
Yes. It's in chapter 11. That even if you're just desiring, that you're considered liberated. Where is it? Anyway, it's here. That even if you're not perfect, but you just desire to be perfect. Oh, also your question about working is in performing all endeavors for Krishna. The Prabhupada says that also the activities you're doing for your livelihood, to offer that to Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita 3:31 says, even if you can't do everything, if you accept the principle... So I can't do everything. Okay, I can't just serve Krishna without any selfish desires. I just can't do it because I have selfish desires. Can you kill desires?
No.
no, can't kill. It's impossible. I can't kill them. They're still there, okay? They haven't gone away. Now they're there because I want them to be there, but that's another issue. So they're still there. But at least I've accepted the principle that I should be going to Krishna without selfish desires. I'm not resenting the principle. I'm not saying, oh, that's impossible, nobody can do that, or that's fanatic, or whatever. I'm not resenting the principle, and I work without consideration of defeat or hopelessness. And there's some regret. Okay, Krishna, I'm serving you, but, you know, even though I'm serving you and trying to please you, I still want so many things. I'm sorry. You know, please accept this offering anyway. Therefore, we offer through Guru. We offer through the Parampara. Because otherwise Krishna wouldn't accept it. You know, we can take it for granted that unless we're experiencing complete transcendental ecstasy all the time, there are some hidden motives. There are some offenses. Must be. Those will go. And in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, people are very concerned with getting rid of the anartas. As you progress, get more and more concerned with pleasing Krishna and let him take care of the anartas. He'll take care of them. You know, you don't really have to worry about that. Just like you don't have to worry about your maintenance. You also don't have to worry about exactly how you're going to get purified. Just serve Krishna to the best of your ability. Don't offend any devotees. Offer everything to Krishna and he'll take care. He'll reveal, he'll show you, here's your anartas, here's your ill motive. And you'll see it and you'll lament it and you'll want it gone and it'll be gone. And you'll keep doing that and keep doing that and eventually the whole thing will be gone. You know, I think of it like this big banyan tree in the heart. And, you know, Krishna shows you one branch of it. As you're performing nice bhakti, he'll show you a branch of it and say, look, this is rotten, this is lousy. And you go, oh, I don't want it anymore. And you're really not want it anymore. And Krishna say, okay, we'll take it away. And he cuts it off. And you go, whew, what a relief. Why did I hold on for that for so long? And then a little later he'll show you, I don't know, a little later he'll show you, you know, another thing. And he'll say, this is what it's like. And you go, oh, take it away. He'll take it away. You go, what a relief. And finally, he'll say, okay, now why don't we go to the root? And by that time, the tree's already pretty weak because you've cut off most of the branches. And by that time, you're so happy getting rid of your anartas that you're like, yeah, let's get rid of the whole thing. Sakai, let's get rid of the whole thing. And you go, yeah, let's get rid of the whole thing. And he just takes out the whole thing. And the big ocean becomes like a little puddle. You know, it looks like there's this big, big ocean and all these anartas and all these ill motives and how will I ever get free of it and it's impossible. And then it becomes nothing. It's just nothing. Yetamam prapadyante. Tarantite. Just cross over. Very simple. So we really don't need to be concerned. We're not the International Society for Anarta Getting Rid of Consciousness. We're just not. I mean, in the beginning, it's natural people are like that. And one of the ways you can tell you're advancing is you stop thinking so much about that and you start thinking more about how to please Krishna and let him worry about that. He's the expert doctor. No, you don't have to worry. Like, I had this tumor on my arm years ago and I didn't have to worry. I just had to surrender to the doctor. I didn't have to worry how was she going to take it out. That was her business. Well, my business was just to surrender. My business was to first say, I think there's something wrong. And to go to the doctor, like the Goswamis, I don't know who I am. I don't know why I'm suffering. There's something wrong. And to go and submit and say, what's wrong? Because the doctor won't go in your house in the middle of the night and operate without your permission. You know, and then the doctor says, oh, it's a tumor. We have to take it out. Okay, what do I have to do? Just come in for surgery and let them do it. Krishna will take care of it. But we can assume we're ill-motivated. Therefore, it's one of the prayers, one that we were talking about the other day, one of the category of prayers is, I'm a sinner, I'm fallen, I'm wretched. So that's assumed. We're not coming to Krishna. I mean, how absurd. Krishna, I'm offering you this with a pure heart. I mean, come on. That's silly. They'll just laugh. I mean, it'll be a kind laugh, but he'll laugh. And he'll show you, he'll get you a mirror. He'll get you a mirror.
What are we offering? What
are we offering? offering. All we can offer Krishna is who and what we are right now, and he'll take care of us. Okay, I got a little bit behind on questions, so I have some from today and some from yesterday, and we will finish all the Angas of Bhakti tomorrow. And there's a...